Welcome to Take the Red Pill,
where we explore the realities within our reality.
We are your hosts, David Deere
and Donald Dalton.
This episode, we are going to talk about conspiracy theories and the like. So, Donald, why don't you go ahead and take us into your idea of conspiracy theories and what they're all about and your take on them?
Well, my personal view is conspiracy theories are when something happens, like an event happens, where not everything makes sense and there's little holes that can be filled. And I think it's those holes that create the conspiracy where people are like, well, if this happened, then, you know, maybe there's other information that we don't know that is also relevant that's happening. And the whole idea is that they're theories because I believe most people, you know, don't know all the information, and there's probably only a few people here and there that know all the information, if not most of the information, to any one specific theory of conspiracy.
Are you talking about specific conspiracies or just the idea of conspiracies in general?
I'm just talking in general, I guess.
Okay. You say that there's only a handful full of people that know the details of a conspiracy theory. Can you elaborate on that for me?
Yeah, with any conspiracy theory that comes out, I believe that most of the time there are a number of people, probably a very small number of people, that are directly related to that event that know specifically what happened.
I guess my question is, if there are a few people that are directly related to the event that are aware of what transpired, does that mean that you would say that there is a conspiracy? That would you subscribe to the validity of the conspiracy in that case? Because it implies there's a conspiracy.
I think it does imply a conspiracy if it's being covered up or if it's being withheld. If these people, for whatever reasons, for, you know, national security or general health of the public or whatever like that, you know, don't come forward or don't mention what information they know. So I think that, you know, to me is basically the definition of a conspiracy.
Well, we've got a lot of conspiracies that are kind of float through the general gestalt consciousness of our society.
Oh, yeah.
For example, we've got, you know, the JFK conspiracy, there's 9/11 conspiracies, there's conspiracies of corporate manipulation, all these things. How much validity do you think those have?
See, I can't make a blanket statement because those go in so many different areas that for me personally, I take conspiracy theory one by one because I think there are some things that people just like to go and run with and blow out of proportion. And then there are others that, you know, it's just like, okay, there's probably something going on here, or there's definitely something going on here, and we're just not being told everything.
Okay. By whom? By the people that are perpetrating the conspiracy?
Probably not the conspiracy themselves, just the people that are, you know, their red flags go up and like, hey, hello, we'd like some more information. Like, there is no more information. If you go with the whole, you know, Roswell incident with the UFOs back in the, I think, was that the late 40s, 1947, 1948?
Something like that. Yeah.
It was a couple of days later, the official word was, oh, it was a downed weather balloon. And then, you know, since that time, people have come forward and says it was not a weather balloon in any way, shape, or form. The military's official stance on that was like, oh, we got it from higher up or whatever. That's just like, we're not going to say that there's aliens because that could cause severe panic and everything. And we're just going to keep it low. And well, what would people believe? It's a weather balloon. Okay. That raises red flags of people that are like, wait a second. Why would people make such a big deal about a weather balloon? And at that point, it's like, these things do not fit together. It was a couple days, I think it was a day or two there, where it's just like, you know, there's information that came out just a little here and a little there that makes what you're saying now seem really silly.
Do you think that there's a lot of merit to the Roswell conspiracies?
Me personally, I would say yes.
Why do you say that's the case? Why do you believe that?
Because, well, I believe that we are not alone in the universe, as it were. Mm-hmm. And if I go on the premise that I believe that we are not alone in the universe, then that opens itself up to logically assume that, you know, another alien race could, for however they do it or whatever, crash land in the Earth. And what would happen in that time, in that culture of, you know, late 40s, early 50s, especially after, you know, the Second World War and everything, what seems to make sense in my mind, it seems like it would make very good sense. And if I was in the military at that time, I would probably have said the exact same thing. And if I was in the military right now, I would probably say the exact same thing. Because it's like a line from Men in Black, where I think they said a few people knowing about aliens and whatnot is okay, we can handle that. But if everybody knew about it and it came out on like the nightly news or something like that, there a lot of people would take it in all ways that you could possibly take it. Some people would be like freaked out. Some people would be like, sure, why not?
Well, see, here's my issue with that approach. Not with your approach, but just with that idea of needing to conceal the truth about it is that, number one, we don't give people the benefit of the doubt. This particular statement I'm going to make divides rooms, because it depends on, are you glass half empty or are you glass half full? If you're glass half empty, you're going to say, well, of course people are going to panic and do the worst things possible. But I don't think we give people the benefit of the doubt. I really don't.
Would you be willing to take that risk on something like aliens, and why?
I would. Because here's the thing. Secrecy has never done anybody any favors. I don't see any application where secrecy makes any sense.
Hmm.
Because, you know, so often it's like, oh, we're protecting people from themselves. Well, that's presumptuous to say that the person wanting to protect people from themselves knows what people are all about. That's very presumptuous, in my opinion. Just to say that, oh, there's going to be widespread panic by people if they find out there's aliens. People have found out all sorts of things and there's not been widespread panic. I mean, there are some people that would go into that mode. But I'm not going to assume that everybody will, or that there's going to be riot and looting and fires and things like that because of it. Don't you think that there is more potential harm in, rather than saying, okay, this is what we found out, these aliens exist, et cetera, et cetera. Don't you think there's a potentially more harm in saying aliens do not exist, and then all of a sudden you find out that you've been lied to? Would you rather be told a truthful thing and have it hurt your feelings, or would you rather be lied to save your feelings and find out that you were lied to later?
Well, for me personally, I like to be told the truth, deal with it at that time, but I'm only speaking for myself. It goes on the whole idea of, if you could be told with complete and utter certainty the exact way, day, minute, and hour that you were going to die, would you want to know? And there are people that would be like, yes, I do. And there'd be other people like, no, I don't.
I think that's different, though, because this isn't the same thing.
I do see it very similar, though, David, because you're saying, let's not hide the truth from anybody, and let's take the whole alien things, for example, like, oh, there are aliens here, and be like, oh, okay, as opposed to finding out in the future or down the road that you were lied to. If you knew the day that you were going to die, it's kind of like, not being given the choice, basically saying, oh, yeah, the world is actually going to end in 2012, and that's just the way it's going to be, and we're absolutely, definitely, positively, without a doubt, sure that that's just how it's going to be. So everyone, have fun until then.
Well, then here's the way I would counter that. If we're going to make this analogous, then what we'd have to say is, if there was concrete, irrefutable evidence the world was going to end on a certain date in 2012, and we said, the world's not going to end a certain date in 2012.
Mm-hmm.
To me, is that a wise thing to do? Are you really doing people a favor?
I think you're withholding choice from people, but I look at it as, you know, if we're talking to giving this information out to the general populace without any possible way to have it be denied, then it's taking hope away. In the respect, because it's like, oh, well, if the world's going to end and they're definitely sure it's going to, then why do I need to go to college? Why do I need to get a job? I mean,
all right. I can see where you're going. So let me say this, Donald, you're going to die.
Okay. Oh, my goodness. Really?
You're going to die. We all believe we're going to die someday, right? As far as if we look at kind of the track record of humanity, it appears that we are going to die someday. But that doesn't take away our hope. if you say to me, well, you know what, you've got probably another 50 years tops, that's it. If you say that to me, so what am I going to do? Say, well, you know what, I'm going to hang it up because my plans all were 100-year plans. And you're telling me I only have 50 years? Well, then forget it. I'm just gonna cash it in. I think a lot of people would say, you know, I'm going to make the most of the time I have. I think it's unfair to presume that people are going to panic. I do think it's unfair to presume that people are going to make certain decisions with the information that they're given.
Well, okay, then I'm going to be really mean right here for just a moment.
Okay.
And I'm going to say, what if you found out that the government had put something in the water table, you drank it, and basically they said, oh, if you've drinking any water in the past 3 days, have yourself checked out. You get checked out, and it says, yes, your cells have already started to deteriorate, and we know that this type of deterioration, you have 3 days to live. You have basically, you know, Saturday, maybe Sunday. With that being the case, how motivated would you be to go to work till Friday for the rest of the week? Would that change your choices of how you lived and what you did?
I don't know. I don't know whether it would or not. I always made this argument with people. I'd say, you know, okay, what would you do if you didn't know you're going to get hit by a car in 3 days, or whether you did? And to me, it's like, really, if you're living your fullest, live like you're going to get hit by a car in 3 days. That's the best way to live. Live like today is your last day. I mean, you hear that all the time. Live like this is your last day on earth. And so to me, really, it seems you'd be doing somebody a favor if you said, all right, in 3 days, you're going to die. You're giving them the ultimate opportunity to live as fully as they can.
I still kind of disagree with that a little bit, because my belief system, my personal belief is that majority of people, depending on what the information is, I agree with you that they will be able to handle it for the most part in a more, you know, adult way, and a more, you know, way where, you know, the world doesn't all of a sudden, looting and everything doesn't happen, or, you know, to that level, and there's not riots happening all over the place. But I do believe that there'd probably be a significant number of people that would not be able to handle it very well, and they would cause that much trouble, and that trouble would then, of course, severely affect the people that are handling it well.
Well, and then we have to look at this, though, Donald. When we're talking about conspiracy theories, most of the conspiracy theories are fueled by the idea that there are a very small number of individuals that want to hold a lot of power, a lot of control over a large number of people, or over an economy, or over circumstances, by covering up the truth, right?
Or suppressing the people that have the ability to take them out of power, yeah.
Okay. So, here's my thing about this. And I really want to take this down this road.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
I know we're not exploring individual conspiracy theories, and that's a lot of fun to that. I want to look at the whole idea behind it.
Okay.
If it's appropriate or not. And I ask myself, if the conspiracy theories are being generated by people who want to preserve their power base, and we say, you know what, it makes sense. We're making excuses for people to preserve their power base by saying, all right, your justification for covering up truths is to, in quotes, keep the people safe. Really, that is not their primary objective. Their primary objective is to keep power.
Mm-hmm.
Now, to me, there's a lie on a lie. If you tell me, oh, yeah, if somebody tells me, not you specifically, but if somebody says to me, I'm making sure that I didn't tell you the truth of the facts because I wanted to protect your own good, I'd be like, no, I don't know how much garbage you're feeding me right now, because you did it for your own self-interests. And then you used the idea of keeping me safe as an excuse to spin a lie.
Oh, okay.
So the ultimate and the overarching reason that fuels and gives birth to what may be a conspiracy, and this is assuming that these conspiracies are valid, that we really are seeing these happen. I mean, we don't know. I'm just going on the idea that really conspiracies are taking place, like Roswell. I think that really it's about, I'm going to hoard this technology because if other people know we have it, they're going to want to get their hands on it. There's potential weapons that can be created here. And it's really for our own self-interests. So, yeah, that's where I think these conspiracy theories would be more likely to be born from.
I have a question. Is there anything that you can possibly think of where if it was complete disclosure of the information of the events or the situation that happened, where you would see it being in the best interest of humanity as a whole to withhold some of that information?
You're asking me if I find...
If you can imagine...
covering up information to be an appropriate scenario?
If you can imagine any scenario where that would be, in your belief system, in your opinion, the best course of action if you were in their place.
Not that I could see, personally. Okay. And it's hard for me to be in their place because I don't have those kind of motivations for power.
Yeah, I know.
So, I mean, what we're doing is we would have to create the scenario for people with altruistic intentions.
Mm-hmm.
And altruistic intentions, you know, again, it's like, if you went to the doctor, would you want the doctor, and the doctor found out that you had 3 months to live, and there's no doubt about it, would you want the doctor to not tell you?
Oh, no, I definitely want to be told.
And I think it's the same thing.
Would you also want the doctor to say, the reason you only have 6 months to live is because you've been eating your Wheaties because the commercials say that you're supposed to, and apparently for the past 20, 30 years, been made in a certain way that causes severe health issues, and that's what's killing you?
Well, if that was the case, then I would be glad to know that so that I could advise other people.
Yeah, but what if the doctor only said, you have 6 months to live, but is not telling you about the whole Wheaties thing, and instead giving you a drug that the pharmaceutical companies, you know, said, hey, for people that have this issue about the Wheaties, because we don't want Wheaties to, you know, lose all this money, and we don't want, you know, a bunch of people to go crazy, and if they come in with these symptoms, this drug will help them, and you know, they're only going to be around for a little while anyway. So from my perspective, we get into a lot of complexity here where how much information do you want to know?
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, for me personally, under those situations, I would be like, I want to know everything, and I agree with you on that. And in this specific scenario, you know, I agree with you on that, where I'd be like, yeah, I want to know, because if this is affecting me, it's probably affecting a number of other people, and we should do something so that it doesn't continue happening, or, you know, do our best so that it doesn't happen again.
Right, exactly. The conspiracy theories, ideas of covering up for gain, and the idea that we're really kind of looking out for other people, yet we ourselves would want to have full disclosure.
Mm-hmm.
So if we ourselves would want to have this full disclosure, I think it's a pretty good bet that most people would as well.
Oh, yeah. And I'm not disagreeing with you on that. I'm just saying that having full disclosure for a majority of people would be absolutely fine, be perfect. It would be, you know, work really well. But I believe that there are some people that full disclosure with certain information could cause them to basically go a little crazy and go a little riotous and have an increase in crime and stuff like that. And that's what I'm referring to when I'm actually saying, depending on the information, if you were a person in power, would you risk public safety for the majority and not tell the minority that would have issues with, you know, whatever secret or conspiracy information you're holding on to?
I'm going to answer this way. If now you put me in a position of responsibility for a public decision, okay?
Yeah.
And I'm not saying a person in power, because it's a whole other thing. We talked about that in the power episode.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm not talking about power. I'm talking about I have a responsibility to a large number of people with what information I give. What kind of information I give to make sure that people didn't incur harm? Well, my personal belief is that when you withhold information or when you conceal the truth from people, it is potentially harmful.
Okay.
There's no reason to not be honest. There isn't. It seems that dishonesty always has negative effects. You know, there's the little white lies, but that's a whole other thing. You're not talking about those.
Yeah.
We're talking about a whole realm of dishonesty. And to say that what we don't know doesn't hurt us, if anything, what you're doing is you are inhibiting the people to empower themselves because they don't know what choices they have.
Mm-hmm.
When you do not give full disclosure, you're not allowing people to make a choice from the full menu of options that are available to them. You're not saying, okay, here's another set of options that are available to you. So you're closing that off. You're not allowing them to make the choices. The more options we are aware that are available to us, the best choices we make.
Yeah. And just to put a finer point on what you just said, I go back to the whole 9/11 thing, and I can't remember the exact flight number, but I think it was like 168, 169, something like that, where they basically realized, oh, plane's been hijacked. It's going to be rammed into a significant government building. We're going to die regardless. What do we do in the meantime? Mm-hmm. We had people that basically, from what I understand, said, well, we're going to make the plane go down before it gets to its destination so that we don't have a huge chunk of government buildings taken out and just have hopefully a field or something like that, which they ended up crashing it into a field.
They took that field out.
Yeah. Yeah. As opposed, exactly. Hey,
the field's not a field anymore.
Yeah.
It's a non-field.
Yeah. I think that is kind of like a microcosm of what you're talking about, where, you know, if you expand that to like the whole population, I think a lot of people would be taking on that more of, hey, let's do the best thing that we can for the greater good. The options that they had on that flight was just like, you know, we can just let these people do what they're going to do and just have the plane end up where it's going to end up, and it's going to kill a bunch of people. Or we can try to crash it into some place that's, you know, has no population or very little population, like a field.
Right.
I think with some of the theories that they have out there, I'm going to have to use the G word, the government word.
with a big G?
Yeah.
Capital G?
Big government. There are so many conspiracies that the government is, you know, withholding information, hiding information on so many different areas and everything.
Do you believe the government is capable of masterminding or orchestrating the kind of conspiracies that we've heard about?
I think what the government is really, really good at is proposing doubt, putting the possibility of doubt into anyone who actually looks into the topic or subject.
You're talking about disinformation is what you're talking about.
Yeah, yeah, okay. Because if it sounds crazy enough, the adage is it probably is. If you have these people over here that are saying, you know, this whole event, this whole situation happened, and we're pretty sure that this happened here and everything, but we weren't there, we weren't in the inner circle or anything, so we don't really know, but this is our information, this is the conclusions that we've come to, and it seems very logical and makes perfect sense to us. And then the government over here says, yeah, here's our explanation, and we see that it's just as good as that. And then, you know, somebody looks at both sides, and it's just like, I can see validity for both of them.
Well, I want to clarify something on that, though.
Okay.
When you say that the government is good at spreading disinformation to obfuscate some of the ideas that people are bringing up of what actually have transpired in some events, to me that implies that something happened that the government doesn't want you to know about. And if that's the case, does that imply that the government is implicit in whatever events are being covered up? Or there are events are being spread disinformation? So that's what I'm wondering is, in these conspiracy theories, how complicit do you believe the government is in orchestrating them? Granted, they're great at the disinformation, but what hand do they have in it before the disinformation?
And that I don't really know. For going across the board, making a blanket statement for anything that any conspiracy theory that is out there where it's like, oh, the government did this and made this and this is how they made this happen. Me personally, I'm just like, I have no idea.
A friend of mine said something brilliant, and I thought it was really funny. He said, if you really believe that the government is capable of orchestrating these complex, with all these conspiracy theories, they're extremely complex. Mm-hmm. They would take a lot of complexity to pull off, with maybe a couple of exceptions. They said, if you believe the government is capable of doing this, just go into any bureaucratic office or government agency and watch the organization at work, or lack of thereof, and ask yourself, can they really pull something off like this when they cannot pull off getting you through the DMV or something like that? And I said, you know, that's kind of a good point. There's other parts of it to me is that there's the old idea that a secret is best kept between three people when two are dead, mm-hmm. says that it's hard to successfully cover up a lot of stuff. It's really hard to pull off a lot of that. And the third part is the motivation. A lot of people say, well, follow the money. But a lot of these conspiracy theories that I hear out there would seem to cost way more than people would be able to spend on a gamble that it's going to generate this, you know, astronomical amount of income for them. So most of the time, I am kind of speculative of conspiracy theories. For one, not to say that they don't exist, not to say that there's not conspiracies, because I think that the assassination of JFK, it seems pretty clear that a conspiracy was at work. Mm-hmm. But many of the other things, the thing about it is, when I listen to the conspiracy theorists, they are avid conspiracy theorists. They're constantly looking for conspiracies. Mm-hmm. They're looking left, right, and center. And there are people that everything is a conspiracy to these specific people. So I'm like, really? Is it there a conspiracy at work here? Or is there an individual that is really latching on to the idea of conspiracies?
And I have to admit, I'm one of these people who, you know, I enjoy a good conspiracy. I wouldn't say I'm one of these people, like you said, goes balls to the wall crazy on most things. There are a couple of things I have my own personal beliefs on that we've mentioned in previous episodes. For most conspiracies that are out there, it's kind of like, oh, that's an interesting one. Okay, sure, why not? Or, nah, that falls short even for me. You know, and then there's others that are just like, oh, yeah, that's definitely an issue. That's definitely what's going on, you know, there. And
what's one of the biggest ones to you? What's one of the conspiracies that you say is really difficult for you to refute as anything but?
Currently, gas prices are astronomical and seem to be getting higher and higher. We have had the technology to create very efficient cars that get an ungodly amount of miles per gallon compared to what we have now. And we've had this for a few decades now. One car in particular, the Volkswagen Lupo, I think I'm pronouncing that right, which was available in Europe, only in Europe for, you know, like I think between late 90s to mid 2000s. You know, it averaged, I'm saying just averaged, you know, almost about 100 miles per gallon per tank. Mm-hmm. Then there's the whole thing with the whole electric car, and it's like, well, we have the ability to do that, but then there's other people that said, yeah, we had to stop. We had to discontinue making those cars because there wasn't a demand for them or anything like this. And I think in this specific scenario, the whole idea of follow the money is apt. Because the oil business is big business in America and around the world. And if you all of a sudden have a technology that can come out and, you know, is exceptionally better for the environment, costs the individual owner of whatever that technology is enormously less than they do from filling up at the pump all the time, then your business is going to take a huge hit. For me personally, I think that there is, I don't want to say it's a conspiracy because I kind of look at it kind of like common knowledge, but it may not be, where, you know, just the whole connection between, you know, needing gas to drive our cars and having to have cars that drive based on gas, I don't think that's had to happen as well as it has. And I think that there are numerous other alternatives that could happen that are much better and that would be exceptionally better for people, and I'm way beyond just like hybrid cars. Mm-hmm. For that one specific thing, that's my belief. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, you know, there's, well, actually, you asked for one, so.
No, keep going if you want.
I could come up with a couple others. Okay, you know how the government classifies marijuana as illegal.
Hold on a second. When you say the government, make sure you say the government.
Oh, I'm sorry.
So that we know that they're an evil dark cabal. Otherwise, we're just going to think they're the people who notarize our passports.
So can we do a dun-dun-dun after that? Like, So, you know, the government, or, you know, the government, dun dun dun.
Yeah, there you go.
The government and its evil, sinister plot to hold a nation captive under their long tendrils.
That's right.
You know? You got me going crazy now.
I know.
But, yeah, one of the things that they've shown is that THC from marijuana has the ability to significantly reduce, if not kill, cancer cells. All kinds of cancer. Not just one specific kind of cancer, but lots of it. And there's documented evidence, too, of it. The other one is that I think a lot of people really grasp onto is the whole Nikola Tesla, where he had the idea of free energy. And that was, you know, suppressed by, you know, I think, what was it? Carnegie and J.P. Morgan or something like that, where it's just like they couldn't find a way to charge people for free energy, so they're like, we're going to squeeze you out a little bit there, and we want to actually make money off of this stuff and not just give it away for free. Those are a couple of conspiracies that have come up and are, definitely Tesla. Tesla, a lot of people are familiar with that. If you want to go on the whole religious aspect, you know, there are all kinds of conspiracies about the Bible and, you know, how that's been used to wield a hand of power over a large group of people for the betterment of a few. And so, I mean, that's just a rough idea of a few conspiracies there.
Well, you know, the conspiracy theories, I think there are, I don't know, I have trouble with them, to be honest with you. I only have trouble with them to the degree that when we get our teeth into them, when we start kind of putting this glow around the whole idea of conspiracy theories, it is so delicious and tempting and tasty of a morsel for us to bite into, to give our power away, to shirk personal responsibility. Well, you know, lives are like this because of the dark entities and the cabals that are making these decisions and putting other things out of business. Again, I like to use the gas one as an illustration.
Okay.
Is there's really no conspiracy when it comes to the automobile industry. The conspiracies, we're all co-conspirators if you're saying that. Really, we are. As far as I'm concerned, you can blame the oil companies as much as you want, but if you're the one driving a car, if I'm the one driving a car, I'm completely complicit in this. And I've got no one. I can't blame the oil companies. I can't blame them for saying, here's a check for $100 million, but yet, you know, we're going to say, I wouldn't take that. Oh, yes, yes, we would. Many of us would. And the thing is to me, it's the same idea as, you know, they talk about the irresponsibility of the oil companies, da, 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 and all. If somebody said to a person, pick a person out of the crowd and said, okay, I have a check for here for $100 million. Do you want it? Yeah. Okay, all you have to do is just take a big gulp full of antifreeze and dump it in the ocean. How many people do you think would do it? I think that's what the oil companies are doing, but they're just doing it on a bigger level. It's bad when the oil companies do it on a bigger level, but for us, it's like, who's going to notice? It's just a cup of antifreeze. I'll dump it in there and get my check, and then I'll hopefully sleep well.
I thought you were talking about take a big gulp of and swallow a...
No, I'm talking about the big gulp, a 7-Eleven big gulp.
Oh, okay.
Take the container the size of a 7-Eleven big gulp. So it's not like a cup where you're like, a cup will dissolve you, but a big gulp. It's like it's a good amount, you know? It might kill a couple of fish, but are you okay with that? Well, I'm getting $100 billion and it's only a couple of fish. You know, these people are like, I'm getting several billion and it's only, you know, a small body of water on a giant planet. And here we are just saying, I want you to be responsible, but I want to cake eat. I want to have my car and I want to drive it too.
Well, I think it's not only that. I think continuing on with this whole gas oil stuff, our society is set up, a majority of our planet is set up where to make money, we need to have an income. And we need to have transportation to the people that will give us our income, that will give us our money.
What, we need feeder free? I know people who ride their bikes everywhere. They don't drive a car.
I know people that do that too.
Yeah.
So the question is it feasible for everybody that works to ride their bike to work?
Oh, I bet you it is. If we wanted it to be feasible, it would be, but we don't. We want quick transportation.
It's a tradition. I mean,
a luxury is what it is.
Oh yeah, I mean, you look at some of these ads and commercials from, you know, 50, 60, 70 years ago, where, you know, the car is like the next coolest, awesomest, best thing, and it's like if you have a car, all of a sudden on a much higher level, and people just know that you're there just because you have a car. What you're saying, the whole luxury thing, it's just like, yeah, I have to take a little bit of issue with everybody going across the board saying that they could ride their bike to work or school or wherever they need to go, because I think if we turned the dial tomorrow and made all the cars disappear, or actually they didn't all disappear, we turned all the cars into bikes, there are a number of people that are in areas of severe snow that would not be able to get to where they need to go on a timely basis, and they would spend half their day getting to work and getting back to work instead of actually doing work. There are other people that commute, you know, probably an hour or two away from work, where they get on their bike, depending on their level of health, it would be more detrimental to their health to instantly bike to work instead of not.
The trouble with that theory, Donald, is you're talking about the overnight cars to bikes poof thing.
Yeah.
But our society took many, 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 many years to be designed around quick transportation. And it would take many, 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 many years to be designed around transportation that didn't reside on fossil fuels. And we can't put it on everyone. We can only put it on ourselves as an individual. I can say myself, I'm not ready to not be complicit with the oil companies. I'm just not, because I drive a car to get to my place of work, because I choose a place of work that is far enough to where if I was really committed to this, I would either have a place of work where I didn't have to bike. If I lived in inclement weather, I would choose a place of work right that was very close to me, where I, you know, only had to work a couple of blocks, like people who have stores, own a grocery store that is right below where they live. These kind of things. But it's all choices we make. And I think with conspiracy theories, we don't want to accept the fact that we are complicit in the conspiracy ourselves. If you want to take about the conspiracy theories of the Bible, and I understand those, which are the idea that you had this power base in the fourth century that wanted to be able to preserve power by instilling fear in a lot of people and really having them turn to this doctrine unless they live a life of eternal punishment and all sorts of other things, you know, subjugating people and creating a social classes and elitism and things like that. Mm-hmm. But if you buy into it, then you're complicit. And when we buy into it, we're doing it by choice. We're saying, this works for me. I like the way of life this offers. So I'm going to buy into it. And, you know, I'm going to give you the power to do what you want.
So what you're saying is, if you buy into the conspiracy of the power base that was set up, you know, back in, you said the fourth century or something like that.
Right. Constantinople. Or not Constantinople, Constantine, excuse me.
Yeah. So you're saying if you buy into that conspiracy, you're giving your power away to that whole thing?
Well, what I'm saying here is that if somebody says, look, like in the case of the Bible, as it were, a lot of verses of the Bible were stripped out because they believed that if people were to accept it, they would not accept the particular people in power.
Okay.
So, number one, you have to accept that their power is absolute. You have to accept that whatever they pass you is absolute doctrine. And you have to accept it as valid. And so, once you do that, there you go. I mean, you've just handed over your power. Once you accept that the government is complicit, then you've handed over your power to the government for being, you know, for creating these conspiracies.
To bring it back to a not so heated topic, we recorded our episode on movies and TVs and pop culture. There is a conspiracy that big studios get together with advertisers so that they can have product placement, so that when you're through with the movie and, you know, through the commercials and everything, you'll have this whole subliminal, almost low-key mind control over time, where you'll want a certain product depending on what shows or what movies you go to.
Right.
From what you're saying, it's, yeah, if you watch TV and movies, then you have a possibility of that if it's actually happening.
Right.
But to totally take your power back, or as it were, is to not give your power away or be controlled in any way, shape, or form, is to basically say, I'm not going to take part in any kind of TV or movies or media of this type.
Right.
I think that that is definitely a choice. That is definitely an option. I think that causes a lot of difficulty for people in interpersonal relationships and connecting with society as a whole.
How?
What if you work in a very big office with a lot of people and you see, you know, probably about 10, 15 people every day? You have this big sports thing that happens and you're not into sports or whatever. Let's take the Super Bowl, for example. So you have the Super Bowl, and the next morning after the Super Bowl, that's what everyone's talking about. It's kind of like, you know, like, so what'd you think? You know, what'd you think of the Super Bowl? And like, oh, I don't watch the Super Bowl. I'm not into sports. They're just kind of like, oh, okay. And then they turn around and it's kind of, they talk to somebody who has seen the Super Bowl at that the night before. And all of a sudden, you know, it's kind of like a very subtle, oh, okay, then we have nothing more to hey, Jim, how you doing? Mm-hmm. You know, and it's basically, and it can give that kind of a, you know, a subtle way of, wow, I really missed out. Everyone seems to be really excited because everyone has seen the Super Bowl and, you know, has stories about it and stuff like that.
Then let me ask you a question on that.
Okay.
Let's say that you were this person. You were the person who didn't watch the Super Bowl.
I've been this person in real life.
Okay, you've been this person, right?
Yes.
Have you ever watched the Super Bowl?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, did it do anything for you?
I enjoyed it.
So I think my question is like I there's a guy I work with who never watches the Super Bowl, doesn't watch sports, has no interest in sports. And there comes a time where people start talking about the Super Bowl and things like that when it's been on. He doesn't participate in the conversation. And if he tries to change the subject, sometimes it goes back to the Super Bowl and all that other stuff. And so he just gets up and leaves. And the thing about it is, I kind of admire the fact that he doesn't feel invalidated because he's watched football and he didn't enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess the question is, does that mean that if he wants to participate in the conversation, if it's that important, should he learn to enjoy the Super Bowl? Or is it okay for him to not enjoy the Super Bowl, to be who he is and embrace who he is, and be shunned for a day?
It depends on how important it is to be social with people that you see all the time.
Well, the thing is I think it's dangerous for a person to feel that they have to be integrally social in every single aspect of every single social interaction.
Oh, I agree.
So I think if it's that important to the degree that you can potentially be ostracized for a day or even for a few hours because you just don't happen to care for something that everybody else is agreeing with, then there's, to me, a little bit of an imbalance. There's an instability in there. I understand the importance of sociability, but to what degree? I mean, do we have to be so connected to everybody and everything on every subject and in every area to be validated?
Oh, I don't think that we do. I'm just saying that, let's take me for example. I have this really strong desire to be social with people. I have this very strong desire to interact with people on a number of different levels and in a number of different ways. I also have the ability to interact with a large array of people from different backgrounds, different life experiences, and stuff of this nature. Now, for me, that is something that's very important, where I may not sit there through 2.5, 3, 4 hours of the Super Bowl to actually see every little play that happened and every little commercial that happened. But, you know, I might get up half an hour early the next morning and before work and be like, okay, so what happened? What are the main plays? So I can be up on it so I can see some video and stuff so that when I do go to work and socialize with people who have seen it, then, yeah, I have something that I can be included in with the conversation. Now, to answer your question, do we have to do that? No, of course not. It depends on what motivates you. As a species overall, you know, we are very social by nature. And so anything that takes away our ability to be social, if a large group of people are taking part of it. Now, what if you were a hermit and you were living out in the in the wilderness of Australia with the Aborigines, and you didn't have any connection, any radio or TV or anything like that, connection to the outside world when 9/11 happened. And then all of a sudden you come out of the wilderness at like 2005, 2006, something like that, and you realize, oh my goodness, something happened. And it's kind of like, whoa, I want to know as much as I can about that. But that first moment before you really find out what happened, people are looking like, you're just now hearing about that? And it is kind of like that. Everybody knows about that. It's like, everybody knows about JFK being shot. Where have you been? Like, JFK got shot? Yeah. I think there is a desire to feel like part of the social groups that we go in and out of, that we keep up with certain popular TVs and music and whatnot, so that with or have something to talk about, if that is something that we desire. For me, it is. Do we need to? No, but I think it's really helpful. And I think this actually leads into the whole conspiracy thing, where you find people that see a situation or an event the way that you see it. Then there's that commonality, there's that rapport there. There's like, oh, hey, you agree with me. Yeah, you agree with me too. And then all of a sudden, there's that connection. And I think to some degree, I'm not going to say to a large degree or a little degree or whatever. I'm just going to say to some degree, with any conspiracy, especially one that gets widespread and envelops a lot of people, there is a social aspect where some people stay with a conspiracy in part for the social aspect of it, and they learn what they need to learn from it so that they can walk in these circles and talk with these people and find this stuff. That's how I look at it.
As you look at it, as a conspiracy theories help people to find a common place to be able to relate to one another?
That's part of it, but I think that what we were talking about is, if we believe that commercials and advertising and studios put out subliminal mind control in the shows and movies that we watch, and we don't watch any shows or movies, then we're kind of taking ourselves apart from our culture, from our society, our mythology of our culture. We're disconnecting from the society that we live in. That makes it a lot more difficult to relate to other people that are not disconnected. I'm going to use the whole Matrix example here. If you're still in the Matrix, you're in the Matrix, and it's like, oh, okay, we know how things go and everything. If you're out of the Matrix, and you're like, oh, okay, so things are a certain way and everything like that. If you are outside of the Matrix, but you've gone into, in other words, you've been disconnected, you're no longer in the Matrix all the time, and you go back into the Matrix, then you have a knowledge that this is not as real as, I'm in a computer simulation, and once I disconnect, then it's real, as opposed to people that are always in the Matrix, where they believe this is real and there is no other real. I think that there's just a point there where if you disconnect too much, you have a very high probability of falling into your own imagination and your own beliefs and your own fantasies to a degree of where basically you can go mad. I'm not saying you will. I'm not saying that at all. I'm saying you have a much higher probability of having severe psychosis, where if you ever did want to reintegrate into society, it'd be a little more difficult.
Well, there are a lot of people I know that do belong to society, that don't participate in the media circus, and don't follow any entertainment. The individual I was talking about, he gets on, checks Google News in the morning, and just picks what it is that interests him in the media. Mm-hmm. But he doesn't watch any television. He watches very few movies. He reads a lot of books, lot of books. He's a voracious reader.
And that's his connection to society then.
Right, exactly. I mean, and the thing is he's chosen that because he feels that literature gives him, and it gives him a connection to society without being subject to what seems like ulterior motives of media, or what seems like the constant bombardment of commercialism from television.
Mm-hmm.
So he's picked these things. He's made very deliberate choices. I mean, things that are very compelling. Television is one of the most compelling elements that is offered in our society.
Oh, yeah.
It's hugely compelling. Entertainment is huge. Entertainers make massive amounts of money. Entertainment industry, I mean, it makes front page news when you have a celebrity that does something untoward or just out of control that we would ignore if somebody else did the same thing. We just look at them sideways. But with a celebrity, we talk about it for days and weeks.
Oh, yeah.
Now, the thing about it is the media and the television and all this other stuff, he feels is somewhat toxic. And so he just chooses to step away from it, but it does not jeopardize his ability to be social. He's just made a choice of how he's going to connect to society socially. So, and he doesn't follow sports. He doesn't. He's seen movies. He watches movies on occasion, but he doesn't watch television. So I think there are elements in which we can choose to connect. And I think what we do sometimes is just go down the path of least resistance because we see the general masses do it. So we just kind of go along with it. And it makes it really easy for us to give our power away to big companies. And the big companies can make decisions and really get those decisions, slip those decisions by very easily because we're compliant. Because they're just easy for us, because we crave that connection so much. We're saying, you know what, okay, so I get bombarded with a little bit of advertisement. It's okay because I'm in touch with everybody. So I think there's a lot of that can go on. And sometimes I think that's fear. It's not so much that we want to be connected, but sometimes I think we're afraid of being disconnected.
Oh, yeah. And I look at it whereas your friend is connected to society through the literature. What I thought I heard you referring to or mentioning earlier was, you know, a complete choice of being completely disconnected from society, you know, from everything, from any kind of news, TV, pop culture, any kind of literature, books, anything that you get information from about what's going on in the world, what's going on in society. That's where I thought you were coming from.
Oh, I see. Okay. What I'm saying is we really do have a choice to be able to stay connected with people and still maintain our individuality. And I think it's dangerous for us when we're willing to give away what's valuable to, like when we use the Super Bowl analogy, when we're willing to give away what's valuable to us. And it's a matter of choice. I mean, there are people who will watch a full Super Bowl game so that they could feel included in a Super Bowl conversation, even if they really don't like the sport.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there are people who dress a certain way and wear uncomfortable shoes so people could say, wow, you look great in those shoes. They're killing their feet, but they're like, wow, somebody said I look great. Well, I find it interesting that when we're allowing ourselves to be uncomfortable for a long enough period so that we can have a great acceptance on some level, or we can work in league and mesh with the society, like having automobiles and live in kind of that kind of society. It's an art of compromise. And I think what happens is the conspiracies that seem to be created on that is basically playing to the art of compromise, if that makes any sense. I don't know if it does.
Yeah, I think it makes a lot of sense. And I noticed we're kind of running out of time. But one thing before we totally run out of time that I really, really wanted to ask you, and it's probably more of a show opener instead of a show closer. But
that's all right. It's our show, right?
Yeah, exactly. What would be your favorite conspiracy theory?
Favorite? What do you mean by favorite?
One that, you know, just captures your interest the most or quite a bit and that you kind of follow here and there and check in on every once in a while.
My favorite conspiracy theories. Do you mean ones that I accept as valid or just...
No. It doesn't matter whether you accept them as valid or whatnot. Just one of them where you hear a conspiracy and it's just like, now that's an interesting one. And whatever... beyond that, you believe or have, it's okay. But basically the one that captures your interest, like, hey, that's an interesting idea or conspiracy.
The fun and most fascinating conspiracies to me is the whole Montauk business.
Oh, yeah.
Love that one because it's just so, so interesting. It's so X-Filesian, I think. I love the whole Montauk stuff. Plus, it's the whole playing with time and playing with dimensions and playing with energy and all that other stuff that's in it. How much validity I give it, I don't know. I don't think it's really worth getting, you know, grabbing on and running with it. It's just like whatever. However, I find it really fascinating stuff.
And can you give a brief synopsis of exactly what the Montauk conspiracy is?
The idea of the Montauk conspiracy. Montauk is the tale of Long Island, New York, and there are these ideas that Montauk played with electromagnetic energy that was able to affect the space-time continuum, and they did experiments with the. Was that the Philadelphia experiment?
Yeah, it was. It was.
The Philadelphia experiment, yeah, in the early 40s where they actually had these electromagnetic generators that were able to take the ship out of phase. And they were trying to make like this invisibility factor. And what it did was it just took the ship out of phase with our space-time continuum. And when things went back into phase, matter did not go back the way it was supposed to, and people were embedded in bulkheads, and people went insane. And there's theories that there are people that got trapped in, that they actually made a 40-year jump from, they kind of created a time-space wormhole that got them from one point in that particular present to a point 40 years in the future. And people got stuck there, and things got stuck there, and there's all sorts of crazy stuff like that. And then they did experiments with astral projection, astral traveling, and Mars visitations, and all this other crazy stuff. It's just a blast.
Oh, I agree. That's definitely one of the most interesting ones, too. So, well, awesome.
Yeah, maybe we'll dig deep into some of those conspiracies and really kind of have fun with them.
Oh, yeah.
I think we got into the theoretical idea of kind of their impact on society. I think next round it'll be fun to really, like, pick a few of them apart.
Oh, yeah. We might even make that our next episode if we shuffle things around a little bit.
Yeah, unless you want to just go for the two-parter.
Oh, yeah, who knows? We'll see.
Yeah.
So for TakeTheRedPillPodcast.com, I am Donald Dalton, wishing you your truth.
And I'm David Deere. Don't believe everything you